It's Let's Talk here on a Tuesday morning. Jeff and Scott with you. We will have a little open phone time coming up at the end of the program this morning.
So many things to talk about.
There's a lot out there.
All right, so let's talk about education here. All right, for folks, you've got kids in school. And again, if I'm correct, all of our local schools, the kiddies are back to school today, I think. Most folks, if they had some kind of an Easter weekend break, it was probably yesterday, and then the kiddies are back to school. Now, that should mean at this hour, the kiddies are back to school, that they're not listening.
Mm-hmm.
Please be back to school, okay? And we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But for you adults, all right, parents or grandparents and so on, what is going on? Various issues with K-12 education. And there's a lot of them. Oh, boy. We don't have enough time here. But let's introduce our guest. Jill Barshe is a reporter for The Hechinger Report, which is a national media outlet that covers education stories. And first off, Jill, good morning, and thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Now, transparency alert, folks. All right, this is Scott. I have been a financial supporter for the Hechinger Report for a couple of years now because, Jill, I really value the work that you do and a number of the other reporters and editors that I guess you folks are kind of nationwide and so on, talking about K-12 education, talking about higher ed, you know, colleges and universities and so on. I really value the work that you folks do. You do some really, really good stuff. So let's get some background if we could. Tell us something about yourself, you know, your background and so on. And then tell us a bit about the Hechinger Report, you know, where you are, what you do and so on.
Sure. Well, my name is Jill Barshe and I've been a journalist for 30 years, I think. I started out as a foreign correspondent in Moscow and in Kyiv. I was there in Ukraine when they were getting rid of their nuclear weapons and just an independent state. I switched to being a financial and business reporter for many years. I've covered Washington, D.C. and Capitol Hill. I've covered Wall Street. I was a radio reporter like yourself at one point. I was the bureau chief for Marketplace, which is the main business show on public radio stations. And a little over a dozen years ago, I joined the Hechinger Report, which is a very small news outlet. We're based at Teachers College, Columbia University, which is the part of Columbia University that trains future teachers. And we started this news outlet around 2011, I think, 2010. It used to be an organization that put on conferences for education reporters to help educate them about academic papers and debates. And then with all the changes in the newspaper industry, we remade ourselves. And we get foundation funding and also private member support from people like you, Scott. So thank you for being a supporter. And we directly hire journalists and use freelance journalists to produce stories. And then we disseminate them on our website. But we also partner with mainstream media organizations for publication or airing. So we regularly work with newspapers all around the country and radio stations, TV stations. Our work is in the New York Times, the Atlantic Magazine, the Washington Post, but also small regional papers all around the country. And we also work with other reporters and jointly partner with them for stories.
Now, we've talked in the program before, and Jill, this is your first time, obviously, with us, but we've talked about how much media has changed just in recent years. Your group is an independent reporting organization. Our friends from Spotlight Pennsylvania do great work. They're an independent organization. There are some other ones out there, really good reporters doing some really good stories. Although, now, Jill, did I hear this right? Earlier, you were a nuclear weapons reporter? Did I catch that right?
Well, I was a foreign correspondent, and while I was in Ukraine, they had just become an independent country, and there was a big question about whether they should be a nuclear power or not, and to get rid of their nuclear weapons, and they did, and I was there at that time.
I could pull out a pun and say, boy, that must have been enlightening.
Oh, it was.
Folks,
it was.
I'm sorry. I'm terribly sorry. That's really bad. Okay, so let's talk. You primarily report on K-12 education. So let's start there. Just was it last week? We had a guest on talking about 4 years of the pandemic. And from a health perspective, you know, what did we learn, what's changed, and all that sort of stuff after 4 years of the pandemic. Let's go to education, all right? And let's how much has education, changed from, let's say 5 years ago until now? Because I keep seeing stories left, right, up, and down about struggling schools and all the problems. Jill, I don't remember these stories 5 years ago. How much, from your perspective, how much has really changed in education over these last 5 years?
It's been enormous. I when you pose the question like that, there are so many categories of changes. One, you have academics. There's so much learning loss that students at every age cannot do what they used to be able to do at that grade. And it's particularly true in math, and it's true across the board. It's not just low-achieving students do less than they used to be able to. It's high-achieving students do less than they used to be able to. Absenteeism has gone through the roof. You have two-thirds of American children in schools where chronic absenteeism is affecting huge percentages of the student body, and it makes it very hard for teachers to keep pace with learning when so many kids are out so much of the time. You have rampant behavior problems, kids talking back, not following rules. It's a very disruptive atmosphere. At the same time, schools have a lot of money. After the pandemic, the federal government gave almost $200 billion to schools. They're really almost flooded with cash in a way they've never been before. And so schools have hired up a lot. There's more teachers. There's more staffing. We notice that grades have gone up. There's been a lot of grade inflation. It's much easier to get an A now than it used to be. Graduation rates are higher. Students are still graduating high school at enormously high rates, I mean, even higher. But meanwhile, we have test scores going down. We have a very politicized environment since the pandemic where politicians and politically active people are very concerned about what's going on in schools. We have book bans, concerns about diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, concerns about bathrooms, about pronouns, and all this has entered the popular discourse in a way that it hadn't 5 years ago. And then we have computers. We have screen time way up. We have it way up at home. Kids are using it at home, and kids are using a lot more computers at school.
Ironhead, if you and I were youngsters, we could be valedictorians this year.
I'm not sure that's even true now.
Valedictorians, holy moly. Now, Jill, you just mentioned a lot of negative stuff there. Now, certainly in the last 5 years, something positive has happened with K-12 education. I mean, something, anything? Can you grab onto anything?
Well, to the extent that it's good to have better staffing, I mean, we've been able to hire more mental health counselors, but it's because we've had a mental health, you know, epidemic. I mean, the reason that we've hired more counselors is not a good one, but we have been able to hire more counselors. That's good, right? And schools have been able to improve their AC ventilation and heating systems. There's been a lot of capital improvements to schools because of this federal money, and so I think that's a good thing.
Let's stick with the mental health component for a moment, because I do think, and again, it's a multi-tiered issue, but the pandemic certainly took its toll on a lot of us, and that would certainly include our kiddos. But that combined with the, I guess I'll call it traditional bullying, where, you know, kids get picked on just, in the neighborhood or on the school bus or whatever, and you combine that now with the cyberbullying and the social media component to it. Do you believe we are at the point where we are facing a mental health crisis with our young people in this country?
This is not my area of expertise, and honestly, I haven't looked into the data or the research studies about this, and so it would be similar hearsay to what you're hearing and reading in the press, but I'm seeing a lot of teacher reports about behavior disruptions, anger management, and I think all of those things must stem from mental health issues. Obviously, the Surgeon General of the United States is worried about a mental health crisis in the country. So I do think something's happening, but it's hard to know what the causes are and how to quantify it exactly. We do know that kids, when they were isolated at home during COVID school closures, didn't have the social interactions they needed. And you need those repeated social interactions to learn how to work together, fight, resolve conflicts, right? And if you were home for a year, I mean, you could imagine how those basic social skills would be stunted and could lead to mental health issues.
One thing, Jill, I keep hearing over and over is about the so-called lost year of education. That first year of the pandemic was so insane, all the remote learning and some of the things you just sort of mentioned and so on. But I'm seeing multiple stories that, you know, hopefully at this point, the pandemic's in the rearview mirror now, hopefully. But yet that lost year of education still hasn't been made up or somehow will never be made up. Now, from your reporting, is any of that accurate? Because I'm thinking about today's, you know, teenagers, let's say, that they're seemingly a year behind. You kind of touched on this earlier. They're kind of a year behind where they're supposed to be. Is that permanent? I mean, is that truly permanent? Or is there some way that we can finally get around that?
It's very sad. I'd like to explain last year. So imagine you had a 9-month period of school where you only made, say, 1 month of learning progress. And either it was because you were remote learning or hybrid learning or your teacher was homesick because of COVID. There were many, many reasons. And so you only made 1 year of progress, 1 month of progress that year. So in a 9-month year, that means you're 8 months behind, almost a year behind. And say the next year you went to school again. And it was normal, and you were able to keep pace with learning. You learned 9 months of learning in that 9-month school year. Great. But you were still 8 months behind from the year beforehand. In order to catch that 8 months up, you'd have to learn faster. Your human brain would have to absorb math like twice as much development in vocabulary and reading comprehension and analysis. And I don't know that the human brain can learn a lot faster. You'd have to spend all of your weekend and summer time catching up somehow. And kids need to, you know, relax and play sports and have social time. It wouldn't even be kind of mentally or physically possible. And so I think it's very hard to do this catching up. When I've looked at research studies on it, and what we see is, yes, that year was lost. And as we go forward, some kids are now learning on pace again. They're learning 9 months worth within a 9-month school year. But many students are not. They're continuing to lose further ground. And one of the reasons for that is when you don't have some of the foundational knowledge you need, it's hard to keep pace with the current instructional level. So imagine the pandemic hit when you were in sixth grade. And so you didn't really learn percentages and rates and ratios as well as you should have. And so as you move to 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, it's really hard to do algebra problems on something that involves a rate or a ratio because you just didn't have the basics down. So you can imagine how you kind of keep slipping further and further behind. And that's what we're seeing in the data.
All right, now we have about a minute till we take a break. I mean, for today, if you're a parent, maybe especially, and you've got a teenager or a youngster, and you've got this lost year of education, I mean, Jill, either you or maybe some other folks have done some reporting. Is this something that could affect these people for the rest of their lives, or is this something that eventually they will catch up? What do you think about that?
I think it's lifetime affecting. It's particularly because of the problem in math, and math is a stumbling block for students, both in high school and later in college. If you're not on grade level in math, it can stop you from graduating from high school. And even if you do manage to graduate from high school, when you get to college, you might not be ready for college-level math, and that's usually a prerequisite for earning college-level credits and being able to, you know, meet the courses that are required for your major. I think math ability is one of the biggest reasons that students fail to complete college.
All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to ask about math, because I'm seeing all these stories about math and controversy with math. I'm like, what? It's math, right? Equations and numbers and stuff. Come on, it's math. We're talking with Jill Barshe from the Hechinger Report. By the way, their website is hechingerreport.org if you'd like to check it out. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox, and we will have some more discussion after this.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead, exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox. The Fox Ironhead.
Penn State senior Aaron Brooks has won this year's Hodge Trophy. The award is given to the outstanding college wrestler each season and is considered the Heisman Trophy of college wrestling. Brooks won his fourth NCAA title and went 22-0 in the season. He recorded 20 wins by bonus points. Brooks finished the season with 96 takedowns and did not give up a single one. He is the fifth Nittany Lion to win the honor, joining two-time winners David Taylor and Zane Rutherford and Kerry McCoy and Bo Nix on the distinguished list. Yesterday's weather forced the postponement of the local high school schedule. Bald Eagle area's baseball and softball teams were to be home against Dubois and Punxsutawney respectively, and the St. Joseph's baseball and softball teams had games scheduled with Juniata. A reminder, we'll have live coverage of high school baseball and softball this spring right here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
Ironhead!
Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox!
Hey, have you checked out our website, 98.7thefox.com, our online home for everything The Fox? Click the stream link wherever you are. Information on Let's Talk with recordings from recent shows and interviews. Information on our afternoon regional sports programs and links to all of the great Fox sports shows heard the rest of the day. Check out our Let's Talk blog posts, local high school sports scores, and links to several area news outlets so you're always in the know. 98.7thefox.com.
Sports Radio 98.7
The Fox. Bear Belly's Beverage in downtown State College, located at 258 West Hamilton Avenue within the Hamilton Square Shopping Center. At Bear Belly's, they have over 500 beers, including domestics, imports, microbrews, seasonal selections, ciders, and more. Bear Belly's is open from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday, noon to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Check out our website at beerbellysbeverage.com. Bear Belly's Beverage, 258 West Hamilton Avenue in State College. Beer better, Bear Belly's.
Talk about great prices. Center Hall Farm Store has fantastic deals to help you save money all winter long on heating wood pellets.
Come here, Bear. Come on. Come on.
Oh, yeah. And for your ferocious little Pomapoo, shepherd, horses, and just about every other farm animal, even your birds. Center Hall Farm Store has created its own perfect, unique mixture of feed, along with commercial feed of your choice. Center Hall Farm Store, 110 West Allison Street. Center Hall. CenterHallFarmStore.com.
Point Sports Emporium is proud to announce the Simply the Brave program, now available from Skag Power Equipment. This program offers pricing discounts of 15% off the manufacturer's suggested retail price on Skag lawn bars and more accessories, and is available to current and retired fire, police, and EMT personnel, as well as active duty military and military veterans. Visit Point Sports Emporium today to learn more about the Simply the Brave program and Skag's incredible lineup of lawnmowers and debris management equipment. Terms and conditions apply. See dealer for complete details.
Here's the K2 Roots Foxcast. Rain at varying rates through tomorrow, some of it heavy. There will be rises in streams and creeks. Total rain amounts 3 to 4 inches. Temperatures during the rain mainly in the 40s through tomorrow. Now looking ahead to Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, strong winds, unseasonable cold.
This is WeatherBell.com Chief Meteorologist Joe Bastardi.
The Fox.
It's Let's Talk here on a Tuesday. Jeff and Scott with you, and again, some open phone time coming up in the final segment of this morning's program.
Once again, talking K-12 education with our guest Jill Barche from the Hechinger Report. Again, their website, Hechinger, is H-E-C-H-I-N-G-E-R, HechingerReport.org. Really good reporting on K-12, higher ed, and so on. Good stuff there. Now, Jill, you mentioned this in the last segment, and I'm just really scratching my head over chronic absenteeism, which apparently is everywhere. And I'm wondering, what has your reporting told you? And why aren't parents somehow being held accountable here? If kids aren't showing up for school, I mean, in the old days, I think the schools used to call the parents like, okay, your kid's not here. What's going on? Is that not happening anymore anywhere? They don't care. What's going on with chronic absenteeism in schools? Whoop, did we lose her?
I'm here.
Oh, there. Okay, I'm sorry. Let me repeat the question. I think we had a little problem there. Chronic absenteeism. What is going on here? I mean, why aren't parents somehow being held accountable? I mean, I wasn't chronic absentee when I was a kid. I went to school. But parents used to get called. I remember that, like, hey, your kid's not in school. What's going on? Is that not happening? What is going on with chronic absenteeism?
I think it's complicated. Parents are being called. Parents are getting text messages, telephone calls, letters home. But what do you do about it, right? Some communities have punitive measures where they fine parents or bring them into court. But I don't know that solves the chronic absenteeism problem. Experts in absenteeism talk about needing to build relationships with families and particularly building relationships with the kids. And when the kids have friends and adults inside the schoolhouse that they care about, that they look forward to seeing every day, that appears to be the one thing that really helps kids come back to school again.
Now, Jill, I keep hearing this phrase, school is optional. And allegedly, a growing number of people, either students or parents, somehow think that school is optional. And have you done any kind of reporting on that? That just sounds bizarre.
I've heard that too, but I haven't written stories about that. I think it's one of the reasons that parents don't think it's that important to send their kids to school. And so if their kid isn't feeling well that morning, or they're tired because they were playing video games too late the night before, they just don't feel that it's that essential to send them to school. And that's why the building relationships, both with the parents and the kids, I think might help get them back into school again.
All right, now I want to ask some questions about some stories that you have done recently. And again, we joked right before the break, what is going on with math? I don't understand. I mean, did they change algebra and I missed the memo or something? I mean, what is this controversy involving math? Allegedly, I guess all over the world, math scores are going down. Math is math. I don't think that ever changes. What's going on with math?
Right. Well, I'm glad you returned to math because we were talking about it just before the break. And like you said, math scores are going down around the world. It's not just in the U.S., but in the U.S., they've been trending downwards, and it started before the pandemic. One thing I wanted to say to parents right now is that schools have a lot of money from the federal pandemic recovery funds, almost $200 billion, and many, many schools around the country have tutoring programs. Some of them happen during the school day. Some of them are happening after school. And what I would just say to parents is, even if your child has an A in math, I would still try to get a sense if they have all of their foundational math ducks in a row, in order, because you might be able to take advantage of tutoring and sort of solidify your child's foundations. Even though they have an A, there might be some big gaps there. I've been hearing around the country that schools have been offering tutoring, but that parents say, well, why does my kid need it? They have an A. And so there's a real misunderstanding of the needs out there. So, yes, we have this backdrop of declining math achievement, and we don't fully understand why. The math wars, there's several segments of them. One of them is that people have been very concerned that low-achieving students have been doing so poorly in math, and when they get to college, they can't even meet their minimum requirements. And a lot of them are in these remedial classes, and they drop out. They can't, and they're in all this debt, and they sort of have a lifetime of ruin. And so the idea was, well, how can we help them learn math better in K to 12 before they get to college? And people have had different ideas on this. One idea is something called detracking. Rather than putting kids who are behind in special low-level classes where they weren't succeeding, let's mix everyone together. And so this was tried in San Francisco, and that led to a lot of controversy because the parents of higher-achieving students say, why are you holding my kid back? Why can't they leap ahead to accelerated classes? And so this is one aspect of the math controversies. Another one is that people said, well, maybe we're racing kids too quickly in math, and we need to kind of slow down, and let's not start algebra to ninth grade. And so this was also tried in Northern California. Algebra was delayed, and that also led to controversies. Then when the pandemic happened, you may have heard about the science of reading and how there was a lot of concern that not enough phonics was being taught in elementary schools and too many kids weren't being taught how to read properly. And math specialists took notice of this revolution in reading instruction in schools. And they said, well, we should be doing the same thing in math. And they developed a science of math group, and it was a bunch of actually special education academics who had an expertise in mathematics, and they wrote a treatise at the beginning of the pandemic, and they started to get a lot of attention, and they started to poke holes in a lot of what they see in elementary school classrooms. They didn't like trends such as not forcing kids to memorize their times tables. They didn't like some suggestions that we should eliminate time tests because they cause anxiety. They didn't like this sort of discovery inquiry learning. They wanted explicit step-by-step instruction of mathematics. So it kind of stirred up the math wars again. And so all of these things, the effort to detract, the effort to delay algebra, this new science of math movement, and also there's this new idea about data science, that maybe we should be teaching statistics more to students and not force everyone through the algebra to calculus track, and that's controversial too.
Yeah, I think I've seen these stories. There should be more with statistics. We should teach kids mm-hmm. how to do statistics. Okay,
yes.
If I want to figure out my favorite baseball player and what his batting average is, well, hey, that's math.
Yes.
That's math.
Yes.
Hello. Now, you mentioned reading and phonics. All right. Now, Jill, this is Scott. I'm an old guy. All right. Phonics works. That's how I learned to read. And I'm wondering, where did we go off the track somehow when it comes to reading and phonics? It just seems like a no-brainer to me.
Right. I would say in the 90s and 2000s, there was a rise and a different philosophy about reading, and that, you know, we should surround kids with books and really encourage them to love reading and give them books at their own reading level and give them lots of independent reading time. And it turned out that worked pretty well for kids who already knew how to read, but for kids who didn't, they needed more explicit instruction phonics. And so now there's really much more consensus. There's always been this consensus in the research community that kids need phonics, but now I think it's hit schools as well, finally, thanks in large part to a podcast called Sold a Story by a colleague of mine, Emily Hanford, and I think that's really changed thinking around the country. But phonics is not the only thing that you need. The science of reading has four other aspects. It has something called phonemic awareness, vocabulary building, fluency, and reading comprehension. And so schools need to do more than just phonics in order for us to become good readers. And there's controversies about how to do these things exactly.
The another component here, I think for young people, and I'm just curious if you've done any stories on this or know any research, but when it comes to extracurricular activities, there is apparently a lot of pressure being put on a lot of kiddos out there that, you know, you've got to be a high achiever and you've got to do this, you've got to do that. So that's on one hand. And then on the other, it's, you know, this constant refrain you hear from young people, oh, I'm bored, there's nothing to do. Like, we've got to offer enough different opportunities here. And, like, I have an 8-year-old, soon to be 9. And one of the things, like, every day we come home and we want to try this or that, or we want to do fencing, we want to do karate, we want to do wrestling, we want to do baseball, and it's like, okay.
Whoa.
Like, we can look.
Slow down.
But, yeah, we're going to do baseball this next couple of months. And then if you want to try one of these other things, fantastic. But, like, we're not going to do 20 things all at once, which is, in his mind, what he wants to do, which is cool that he's interested in all these different things. It's like, let's pick one thing, see if we, you know, delve into it for a month or two. If we actually like it, you know, we can maybe develop it. But where are we at, and how challenging is it for schools right now? I guess both from a resources standpoint and just trying to find something that is of interest for all of the different kiddos and all of the different interests that may be out there.
I was just thinking about my own child when you were telling your story. My daughter's 15, and I so remember when she was 8 and 9 and wanting to do everything. And it's so hard as a parent to say no, because you know it can be too much. And because it's exciting to try everything, right? Like, she did softball and singing and piano and art, and all these things were so fun. And she was blessed to go to a school where they had a lot of these activities. I mean, some schools don't offer all that much in terms of extracurriculars, and particularly the more poverty that there is at a school, the more they're really trying to focus on the basics of reading and math. And often, you know, these schools might only give an art class or a music class, you know, once a week if they're lucky. And so there's so much less exposure for some kids, which is really sad. I think all these special activities is what can help kids love school and want to come to school every day. I wrote about a research study a few weeks back about the harms that happen when kids have too many activities after school and they don't have enough downtime just to decompress and be with their friends. And these researchers saw a very high correlation between the amount of homework and extracurriculars and mental health issues. They saw higher incidence of depression, anxiety, antisocial behaviors when students didn't have enough downtime. And so I think homework in that study was the biggest contributor, and not so much these activities like baseball and art. I think it was the kids who are really weighed down with homework that this was happening with. And it was sort of an argument for schools to think about the amount of homework that they're giving.
All right, Jill, we have less than a minute left. I could go for an hour. Ooh. I mean, I've got a pile of stuff. Very, very, very quickly and very briefly. I don't know if you've done reporting on this. Artificial intelligence, AI, and K-12. I've seen negative, yeah. I've seen positive. What are you seeing with AI in schools right now?
I don't know how much schools are using AI. I think students are for writing their papers. I don't know how much they've been embedded into education, because I don't think the applications are really in the market yet. I mean, people are talking about using it for grading to make teachers' life easier or giving essay feedback. Maybe teachers could use it for lesson planning or advice on how to handle a particular student that's becoming harder to teach, just like the way a doctor might turn to like an AI database to help them diagnose a complicated patient. I think there is hope down the road and dangers, but we haven't seen it yet in the classrooms. You know, there's experiments. Khan Academy is experimenting with an AI tutor for math, and there are students in the classrooms that are using it. I don't know yet how well it's really working.
Well, Jill, I tell you what, we're out of time, but we would love to have you on again sometime just to talk about education stuff.
Sure.
Think we could do that?
We'll try. Thank you.
I love that. Hey, have a terrific day, and thanks for your time. Folks, we got to take a break.